The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter number 14, Text number 34, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on April 3rd, 2016, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Patram to Atra Niruktam Vai Kavibhi Patra Vitamai Hari Eva Eka Urva Urvi Isha Yat Mayam Vai Chara Acharam Patram Tvatra Niruktam Vai Kavivi Patra Vittamai Harire Vaika Urvisha Yanmayam Vaicharacharam Patram Tvatra Niruktam Vai Kavibhi Patra Vittamai Harire Vaika Urvisha Yanmayam Vaicharacharam Patram. The true person to whom charity must be given. To but Atra, in the world, Niruktam, decided, by, indeed, Kavibhi, by learned scholars, Patravitamai, who are expert in finding the actual person to whom charity must be given. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Eva, indeed, Eka, only one, Urvi Isha, O King of the Earth, Yat Mayam, in whom everything is resting, Vai, from whom everything is coming, Characharam, all that is moving or non-moving within this universe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O King of the Earth, it has been decided by expert learned scholars that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in whom all that is moving or non-moving within this universe is resting, and from whom everything is coming, is the best person to whom everything must be given. Purport. Whenever we perform some religious act in terms of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, we must perform it according to the time, place, and person. Kala, desha, patra. Narad Muni has already described the desha, place, and kala, time. The kala has been described in verses 20 through 24, beginning with the words anaye vishuve kuryad vyati pate dinakchaye. And the places for giving charity, performing religious ceremonies, have been described in verses 30 through 33, beginning with Sarangshi Pushkaradini Chetanarishtani Uta. Now, to whom everything must be given is described and decided in this verse, Herer Evaika Urvisha Yanmayam Vaicharacharam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the root of everything, and therefore He is the best patra or person to whom everything must be given. In Bhagavad Gita 5:29 it is said, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshvaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam Vyatvamam Shantam Rishtati. If one wants to enjoy peace and prosperity, he should give everything to Krishna, who is the real enjoyer, real friend, and real proprietor. It is therefore said, yatattara mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujo pakashka pranoch paharachcha yatendriyanam tataiva sarvarhanam achut yateja. Bhagavatam 4:31-14. By worshipping or satisfying Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, one can satisfy everyone, just as one can water the branches, leaves, and flowers of a tree simply by watering its root, or as one satisfies all the senses of the body by giving food to the stomach. Therefore, a devotee simply offers everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead to receive the best results of charity, religious performances, sense gratification, and even liberation, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. It's the fact that giving everything to Krishna becomes all auspicious. This is the peace formula. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshvaram surhidam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanchamishnati. One who knows me, the supreme proprietor, sarvaloka maheshvaram, the supreme enjoiner, bhaktaram jagatapasam. And as the best friend, surhidam sarvabhutanam, he can have peace. So the whole world is suffering right now because they don't acknowledge Krishna. It's the supreme owner, supreme enjoyer, and supreme friend. So this formula has to be propagated. The leaders don't realize how to solve the problems. They think about all this legislation, all these government policies. It's complete rubbish. They will never have peace and happiness in the world until they take Krishna's peace formula. These other peace formulas will always fail. But Krishna's peace formula never fails because it's perfect. It's coming from God, who is absolutely perfect. All of us here in this world, we are imperfect. That's why we're here. This is the word for the world for imperfect persons. Persons who misuse their independence. They take birth here in the material world. You see. This is the reformatory for imperfect persons to again come back to their perfectional consciousness. Perfectional consciousness means Krishna consciousness. To be in harmony with the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. It's like if you're playing in a symphony orchestra. When I was a kid in high school, I used to do that. We had our symphony orchestra, and I played the violin in the symphony orchestra. So the conductor would have the first violin play middle C on his violin, and then all of us would tune our instruments to match that tuning of the lead violinist in the orchestra. So in this way, we were all in tune with each other. You see. Under the direction of the conductor, we were all in tune. So right now, we're out of tune. It's like a symphony orchestra is going on, and your instrument is out of tune. The conductor says, well, go over there and get your instrument in tune, then you come back and play with the orchestra. You're out of tune, so better go in the other room, get in tune, and come back. You see. So the material world is a world for those who are out of tune, to get back in tune. And then once you're back in tune, you can rejoin the symphony orchestra going on in Goloka Vrindavan. So here we are, we're out of tune, you see. We have to tune up. But we're having a tough time trying to get back in tune. That's why you have to have a spiritual master. You can't get in tune on your own. You don't even know what the tune is. See, we require the spiritual master to guide us what it actually means to become perfect. I was desiring spiritual enlightenment before, but I had no idea how to achieve it. I had no idea what it was even. I heard about enlightened spiritual beings in India, advanced transcendentalists. And I was thinking, yes, I would like to achieve that. But I had no idea how to do that. You have to learn from bona fide spiritual master how to achieve it. If you have a bogus guru, then it's useless. My first guru was a bogus guru. The teaching was you sit and stare at a candle. You turn off all the lights, you light a candle, you sit and stare at the candle. So that was the art of meditation, becoming self-realized. You stare at a candle. It didn't work. A friend came over there. One of our friends came over to the apartment, knocked on the door, and I opened it up. She was completely wooden. Like you've seen a ghost, you know. After I got up from my candle meditation, I looked like a ghost. So that didn't work. So I had all these home study lessons, you know, this correspondence course by mail. So I just, one day I said, this is enough. I just took a match and burned all the lessons. I got a little bit of Ananda out of the course by burning all of the lessons. And then the next spiritual mentor, I went to, some friend said, well, you need to get initiated by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi in a transcendental meditation. So I tried that one too, you know. They gave me the mantra, Aing, Aing, Aing. I think I said the other day. But it didn't work. You're going Aing, 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 trying to lift off the material plane. You know, there's no lift off. You just keep going Aing, 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 eternally stuck in the muds of material nature. But when you actually get a transcendental sound vibration, you see, Golokera Harinama, Golokera, Prema Dana Harinama Sankirtana, thank you. This Hare Krishna mantra, it's imported from Goloka Vrindava. It's not an ordinary vibration. It's an import from the spiritual world, you see. And this Hare Krishna mantra is transcendental sound vibration. It is not of this world. When you connect with the Hare Krishna mantra, it's called Shabda Brahman in Sanskrit. Transcendental sound vibration. Shabda means transcendental sound vibration. Brahman means transcendental. When you connect with transcendental sound vibration, now you're connecting with something which is not of this world, it's actually of the spiritual world. And when you absorb yourself in that transcendental sound vibration, it then carries you beyond this material world. It's like an airplane, you see. Or a spaceship that can cross through the coverings, pass through the coverings of the universe and enter the spiritual world. So this Hare Krishna mantra is like that. It's a transcendental spaceship. You can just get in there, absorb yourself in it, and it will carry you through the coverings of the material universe, all the way into the pastimes of Krishna going on eternally in the spiritual world. So this is not some make-believe thing or some, you know, it's just another hypey thing, another religious cult. This is a science of how to actually get out of the cycle of birth and death and become situated in your true identity in the spiritual world. So there's nothing compares with this. The whole world is desperately needing to take to Krishna consciousness, not just another religion on the block. There's the Christian church, there's the Muslim mosque, the Jewish synagogue, you know, and the Hare Krishna. It's not like them. It's not like them. Let there be only one religion, that's devotion to Krishna. Because they have polluted the pure bhakti science. With, they approach God to fulfill their material desires. Give me this, give me that, give me, give me, give me. How was I taught by my mother to become God conscious? He said, little Stevie, what do you want for Christmas? Oh, mommy, I'd like a pair of cowboy boots. Okay, little Stevie. Now, every night before you go to bed, you must pray to God for a pair of cowboy boots. And so I did that, and what was under the Christmas tree on Christmas Day? A pair of cowboy boots. God sent me some cowboy boots. That's how I was trained. You see, God is the wish-fulfilling agent. Whatever you want, you ask God for it. You see. But that's not God consciousness. That's cowboy boot consciousness. You see. Such self-centeredness does not liberate you from this material existence. You can believe in God and not go, and go to hell. You can believe in God and go to hell. because you didn't have the right relationship with it. You wanted to use God for your own sense gratification. You see? It doesn't satisfy the self. Ahaitakiya pratiyata. If you want to become actually happy, then you have to be unmotivated. You can't approach God with your material desires. You cannot do that. You cannot do that. A pratiyata, it has to be 24/7. You just can't do it once a week on Sunday morning, you know. Go pray once a week and go back to your sense gratification. Ahaitakiya pratiyata, Bhagavatam says. It must be uninterrupted and unmotivated. Your only desire is to please Krishna. You say, well, that's too selfless. I mean, I need to be a little bit selfish. They have a saying, you've got to take care of number one. That's true, but they don't know who number one is. They think they're number one, you see. Got to take a, they have a saying, you've got to take care of number one. They think they're number one. But no, you are not number one. Krishna is number one. So if you take care of Krishna, it's the old example, you know, the tree and the root of the tree. You can water the leaves all day long, but if you ignore the root, that tree is going to die. If you want that tree to flourish, you better water the root. So if you will focus your energies on seeing that Krishna is satisfied, you understand? If you will focus your energies on seeing that Krishna is satisfied, then you will taste a satisfaction so sublime, so nectarian, you couldn't believe that there was such a happiness that even existed. Because you never tasted anywhere in the material world, even your greatest moments of material happiness, you never tasted anything close to this. Even magnifying your greatest material happiness by a million times, it doesn't compare with one little drop of the happiness of Krishna consciousness. So we just have to learn how to become Krishna conscious. We have to get out of the modes of nature and actually learn what it means to be Krishna conscious. You see? We hardly know right now. We're just barely scratching the surface. What does it really mean to be Krishna conscious? It means to become completely selfless, that your only desire is to please Krishna. You'll do whatever Krishna wants. You see, you're completely detached from your own enjoyment. Your only attachment is to pleasing Krishna. You'll do whatever Krishna wants. Do you think Prabhupada wanted to come to America? He was comfortably situated in India. Even after he came, he was checking. He was going down to this Scindia steamship office to see if any ships were going back to India anytime soon. It was very austere, but he did it on the order of his spiritual master. Even we read the other day that he probably said, "I'm not happy." Remember we read that the other day? Prabhupada was saying he wasn't happy in New York. We read the other day. Yeah. It was an austerity for Prabhupada to come to America in a strange place with no money. Can you imagine going to New York City with 40 rupees? Would you go to New York City with 40 rupees? You know how much? It's like $1. No. Maybe it was that three or six kronas? Six or whatever. I mean, can you imagine the position he was in? He had no money. He was barely surviving by selling a few books here and there. Couldn't even rent an apartment. He had rented a little cubicle, a little office with no running water, just a little tiny office. It had no water, no bathroom. It was just a little tiny office space he rented for a few dollars. That's how he lived. And he had to walk a few blocks away to use the toilet, to take a shower, and to cook, using somebody else's facilities, Dr. Mishra's place. So this is the standard. You have to get out of this idea of trying to just take care of your own happiness. You have to think, how can I please Krishna? How can I please my spiritual master? That's how you become genuinely happy. You have to get out of this little bubble of modern day, you know, egotism. You got to say, get rid of it. Just kick it out. It doesn't work. It's a model of happiness that has miserably failed. Egotism. You have to get back to Krishnatism. putting Krishna in the center. That's your natural position, with Krishna in the center. So if you can do that, your whole life will be changed. Everything will become transformed, amazingly transformed. If you don't do it, good luck. That's all I can say. Good luck. Good luck to finding the happiness here by money or position or, you know, good luck. You're going to need it because you're not going to get your happiness here. Unless you put Krishna in the center, you're not going to be happy. I'll just tell you straight. You will not be happy unless you purely put Krishna in the center. You won't be. You will not be. So we have to learn this art from the bona fide spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and those who purely represent him. We have to learn this art of how to put Krishna completely in the center of our consciousness. That everything is for Krishna. Everything is for Krishna. So perhaps there's some questions I can try to answer them. Yes, Prabhu? Comfortable situations are not the cause of real happiness. For keeping health, we're allowed to make some comfortable arrangements. There's not that you have to go out and live on the street. It is our quota to make proper comforts so that we have good health. But that doesn't make you happy. You can have the nicest apartment and the best food, the best facilities, and be a miserable person. So your real happiness is your relationship with Krishna, your relationship with Guru, your relationship with Vaishnavas, you see. A pure, selfless relationship with Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas. That's your actual happiness. Comforts are there for keeping health. You know, proper heat, proper food, proper environment. That's your quota. You're allowed that. But that will not make you happy. You'll only become happy by reviving that lost loving relationship with Krishna, by having a bona fide spiritual master, being submitted to a bona fide spiritual master, having loving relationships with Vaishnavas. That will satisfy you, nothing else. Okay? Next question. Yes. Can you repeat that for me?
In order to achieve success, you explained yesterday that one must approach a guru, and that the guru and the disciple, they like to check each other out before committing.
That's right.
So he was asking, what is the position, like, how is that relation with the shiksha guru? With the shiksha guru?
Actually, shiksha guru means someone you take instructions from. What Prabhupada taught us in Austin about the Siksha Guru, we got a letter from Prabhupada when I was in Austin about Siksha Guru. Way back in 70, must have been 71 or 72, Prabhupada wrote a letter that came to one of my godbrothers in the temple. Prabhupada said, you have only one authority, and that is your Diksha Guru. Only one Guru is your Diksha Guru. But others who instruct you in the same way, give you the same teachings, they can be taken also as gurus. So that's called Siksha Guru. It's like I have one guru, that's my one guru is Srila Prabhupada. And if somebody else instructs me in the same way that Prabhupada instructs me, just like, for example, if you told me, Prabhu, chant Hare Krishna, then you're my Siksha Guru, you see. Because you're telling me the same thing that Prabhupada says. So anybody who tells me the same thing that Prabhupada says, they're my Siksha Guru, you see. If Lindanath tells me the same thing that Prabhupada says, then he's my Siksha Guru, you see. So whoever tells me the same thing that my Diksha Guru tells me, they are my Siksha Guru. So I judge them by knowing, by seeing if they're properly representing Prabhupada. You see? So that's how you determine Siksha Guru. Is he properly representing my Diksha Guru? He's properly of course, the Diksha Guru means he's properly representing Prabhupada. Otherwise, he can't be my Diksha Guru. Even if I took Diksha, just like I took Diksha from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, but I rejected him, you see, because he wasn't teaching the Parampara teachings. I rejected my first initiating guru. I take that as a bogus initiation. It wasn't genuine, because he wasn't a bona fide spiritual master. A materialist, actually. Successful. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi is a very successful materialist, but supposing himself as a guru, but not really a guru. So it's all based on pure Siddhanta. Who is presenting the teachings purely? It's all based on that. Diksha Guru and Siksha Guru. Who is presenting the teachings purely? Yeah. Yes, the dog also is our Bhaktivinoda Thakura gives the example. The dog we learned a very good lesson. He's completely faithful to the master. Even the dog will sacrifice his life to protect his master. So, in this way, the dog is also, for us, a Siksha Guru. But we don't take Diksha. No. So, any other... Yes? I don't say we can't approach Krishna. You can approach Krishna in material desires, but you're not going to get Krishna if you do it. It's stated, akama sarvakama va moksha kama udharati. Whether you have all material desires, no material desires, or you desire impersonal liberation, you should approach Krishna. So it's better they approach Krishna with the material desires than not approach him at all. But you can approach Krishna in material desires, but you won't get Krishna. I prayed to God for cowboy boots. I got my cowboy boots, but I needed God. I got my cowboy boots, but I didn't get Krishna. You can approach, but you won't get Krishna. And you won't be satisfied either. You may get your trinket. It's like Dhruva. He wanted a kingdom greater than his father's. You see. He's praying for them. He's doing tapa. To get a kingdom greater than his father's. And Krishna very kindly appeared as that very wonderful form. And he realized what a fool he was. Why was I, what kind of idiot was I? Instead of, here's the rarest gem, Krishna himself. But I was simply seeking some broken pieces of glass. What a fool, what an idiot. So you can approach, but you're not going to get satisfied by that approach. So what is your question answered now? Or? Okay. Let's see if there's any questions from the internet coming in. No questions from the internet. Our internet, yeah? Same activity can be selfish or selfless depending on your consciousness. Even chanting Hare Krishna. It can be, one may be chanting, let me become a famous bhajan singer so people will adore me. Selfish. So it depends on the consciousness.
By linking the initial desire, by engaging, you can purify.
Yeah. So if you're selfish, do it in relationship, do it with Krishna consciousness. It's better to approach Krishna with your selfish desires than to not approach Krishna with your selfish desires. Because then you still get purified by that contact. But you should not do. One who knows better should not do. That's for the innocent mass of people. But anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, they should not do them. They will stay in the material world as long as they hold on to the material desires. Anyone who's come to this movement, they should give up all material desires. It's a waste of time. Why pray for fulfilling material desires? It's just a waste of energy. Focus simply on awakening your pure love for Krishna within your heart. That's it. Nothing else. That will give that. Otherwise, you're not going to be happy. As long as you say, well, Krishna, I want this, Krishna, I want that. I mean, just stop it. Don't do that. For materialists, that is good. But for you all, for us all, you see, we've taken to this path to try to become pure devotees. So we have to give up all these kind of material desires. We have to give them all up. We're just hurting ourselves if we hold on to them. Next question. Yes, Prabhu. Prabhupada clearly stated that the you have one guru, the one who gives you initiation. So, diksha is a pretty important thing. It's a commitment. It's a vow of total commitment to your spiritual master. We can't say, well, it's a siksha line, so diksha is not very important. We can just kind of brush it aside, you know. Who needs diksha anyway? All you need is siksha, because we're in the siksha line. So Prabhupada being initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was not very important. We cannot say that. That would be an improper understanding. We do know that there are certainly diksha relationships in our sampradaya. It's like Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati do. Some of them were siksha-only relationships. That we also know. So you can, in that sense, you can say it's a siksha line because siksha was there all the way through and diksha was not always there in every case. That we can say. That's accurate. But to say, therefore, diksha is not important, that's not proper understanding. It's Prabhupada. Our authority is Prabhupada, you see. We can make our own interpretations of Vaishnava history and draw different conclusions, but we take Prabhupada's instructions as law. You see? Prabhupada said your deathlessness begins from the very day of initiation. So, even if you say, well, our line is the siksha line, so. But still, because Prabhupada is our siksha guru, say it's a siksha line, but the siksha guru, the ultimate siksha guru for all of us is Srila Prabhupada, and he said deathlessness begins from the day of initiation. So our siksha guru, Srila Prabhupada, he confirmed the overriding importance of initiation, because that's when you actually enter into deathlessness. He didn't say, from the first time you heard siksha, you entered deathlessness. He said, the day of initiation is when you attain deathlessness. So, siksha without diksha is, it's like being engaged without getting married. There's no commitment. You see, you can get siksha. There's many people have been coming to ISKCON and getting siksha for many, many years, even decades, getting siksha, but they don't take diksha. They don't want to make that commitment. You see, so for such a person, you know, there, it's, the connection is not there yet. Diksha is that. There's this, the diksha ceremony is not complete until there's obedience. The three things have to be there: shelter, initiation, and obedience. Suddenly, oh, I'm initiated, so I'm saved. Like Christianity, I accepted Jesus, so I'm saved. No. There's three things that are essential. You have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, you have to get initiated, and you have to obey him. That's it. And that makes you strong in Krishna consciousness. That makes you solidly fixed. You say it's a siksha line, so diksha is not so important. That's not what Prabhupada said. We hear that was never said by Prabhupada when he was here. It's a siksha line, so diksha is not important. This is devotees saying this later on after Prabhupada left. We never heard this when Prabhupada was here. It's some new idea floating around ISKCON. Oh, it's a siksha line, Prabhu. Diksha is not so important because it's a siksha line. Prabhupada never said such a thing. This is some of these philosophies floating around ISKCON. I mean, you can say it, there's a truth to that, but the biggest, most important thing is to understand the absolute necessity of being initiated. Because without initiation, there's no connection. You're not actually connected. You haven't made the commitment. Yes? There's no surrender. Siksha, I can take it or leave it. You see? Thanks for the siksha, Prabhu. And I'll take some siksha over here, a little siksha there. You see? Disciple of many gurus is a disciple of no guru. You see? But when you actually commit yourself, now you are my authority, I fully surrender unto you. You see? Yeah, just kind of read the books. I said, no, you must make guru concrete. Do not take guru in the air. So, yeah. Of course, the diksha guru is also a siksha guru. He gives you instructions. It's not that he just gives you initiation, doesn't give you any instructions. So, in my case, Prabhupada is diksha and siksha guru both. But so, it is required to, initiation is required. That's how you become deathless, by beginning initiated and carrying and executing your duties as a disciple of the spiritual master. Yeah, there's a tendency nowadays to blur the whole thing. Yeah, siksha, diksha, they're all the same. Of course, spiritually, it's a fact, according to the CC, the diksha and siksha gurus are both equal manifestations of the Supreme Personality of God, as stated by Prabhupada. So that's true, but you have to understand what is the real meaning of siksha guru. Prabhupada told the siksha guru, one who represents purely the diksha guru. That's the meaning. Somebody's telling something different than my diksha guru. He's not my siksha guru. That's according to Prabhupada's instructions. Now, somebody may disagree with that. But they can do that if they want, but I'm going to follow what Prabhupada told them. You see? Some may not agree with that. But I'm just going to stick with what Prabhupada said. I'm a disciple of Prabhupada, not the latest, ideas floating around ISKCON. I'm sticking with Prabhupada taught me, and that's it. I got everything I need from Prabhupada. I don't need anything else. These new ideas that devotees come up with. I don't need other stuff. I have Prabhupada's teachings. I have my guru, I have Prabhupada, I have his teachings. Now, if I can gain a deeper understanding of Prabhupada's teachings, that's I'm very welcome to. If these different explanations we're hearing, they deepen my understanding of Prabhupada's teachings. They mature, give me a more mature and well-rounded understanding of Prabhupada's teachings. That is welcome. That's welcome. But if they take me into an understanding different than what Prabhupada said, then that, no. I only take siksha, which reconfirms and deepens my understanding of what Prabhupada has taught me. Anything that kind of, well, you know, just like Prabhupada very clearly told us, no illicit sex. Sex is only for procreation. That's the rule. That if you're initiated, that's your vow. You're only going to have sex for procreation. Once in a month after chanting 50 rounds of japa, there's no scope for any other type of sex pleasure other than that for a householder. But then someone says, well, ideally that's the standard, but no, there is no but. That is the standard for initiated devotees. They only have sex for procreation, otherwise they're just brahmacharis. Not that they can mess around a little bit. There's some leniency that they can have a little illicit sex, you know, once a month, two or three times a month. No. You see? Strictly with Prabhupada. I don't accept these watered-down versions that are floating around ISKCON. I don't accept them. If you want to water it down and enter new ideas to make it more acceptable to the public. Prabhupada didn't come to learn our ways. He came to teach us his ways. So I'm going to stick with Prabhupada's way there. What I learned from Prabhupada, I'm sticking with that. Because I know, they say, well, that's not going to attract the mass of people if you... No, no, that's not true. Prabhupada gives the example of one sweet shop in Delhi, that everything they sell from their shop is made with pure ghee, and their shop is very popular, you see. So I don't buy this idea that, well, you have to water it down, you know, and make it more accommodating for Westerners. I don't buy it. We have to water it down, Krishna consciousness. No. We just keep it as it is. That purity will actually attract the whole world. I'm convinced that the whole world will become attracted to this movement in due course of time. The whole world will accept Prabhupada's authority. And that day is coming. I'm convinced it's going to come. We just have to stick to what Prabhupada told us and not water it down with anything. I'm convinced. Absolutely convinced. Therefore, I'm not compromising. Huh? Purity is the force. Yeah. Keep it as it is. Yes. Absolutely. Then they, the karmis are about sense gratification. Yeah.
We are in this temple, although this is Navashriva Sangam, we are a little short on people who have this mental inclination. What to do about that?
I mean, clapping the hands? That's an instrument also. We should have the music lessons. Amit Krishna plays a very good. You have some very good musicians here. You should learn. Whoever is talented, you should learn from them. Amit Krishna is very good. I was sitting by him. Oh, I'm like, wow. He's top notch professional standard drum player. You should learn from those devotees who are expert. Isn't it? I was blown away. I'm sitting there. I was playing the harmonium. I was going, wow, this is amazing. I was watching what I was doing on that drum. So we have some amazing musicians. You should learn from them how to become better musicians for Krishna. Yeah.
It seems we are at the core of, like, really hardcore non-musicians.
Hardcore what?
Hardcore.
Non-musicians?
Non-musicians.
Well, just chant sincerely. What can I say? You know... If you chant sincerely, even if it's not according to, even if you're off the beat and you're out of key, like a sick cow or something, you know.
We seem to scare ourselves
And you have some. You said whoever has good musical abilities, and it has to be the mood of devotion. Also, the mood of devotion is more important than musical ability. And musical ability is okay, but the most important thing is the pure chanting. Because there are many professional musicians who chant Hare Krishna, and it has a polluting influence on the mind. It's not so. The best thing is the purity. Chant purely, and actually Krishna will help you. That's a fact. If you just chant purely, Krishna will help you to make it more beautiful and more attractive. You just keep chanting, and sincerely, Krishna from within will guide you how to make it more beautiful and attractive. Boom, boom. No, the instruments is like we have a painting here. See? Nice painting, a frame. The musical instruments are the frame, and the name is the painting. You wouldn't have the frame is more predominant than the painting. You see what I'm saying? The frame helps to attract your attention to the painting. So the music is actually something to help draw the attention to the name. It shouldn't override the name. You get the drum, the percussion is so loud you can't even hear the chanting anymore. You go, oh, we can boom, 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 boom. Where was the name? I didn't hear the name. I just heard boom, 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 boom. You see? Like it's like a huge frame, a little tiny picture. You can't even see the picture. All you can see is the frame. You see? So the kirtan is meant to attract people to the name. That's what it's for. Attracting people to the name. That's the advantage of having a microphone during the kirtans in the temple, you know, not just on Sunday or whatever. So the kirtan, the names can be heard more prominently. Let's see, we have some questions coming in now from the internet. Let's see what we got here. We got who's the first one on the list? Are you sure? I see Casper's from Riga. What is the best way or process or spiritual activities to forget material desires? Remember Krishna. If you remember Krishna, your material desires will go away. You have to fill up your mind with thoughts of Krishna by chanting his name, by hearing, by reading, by serving. Absorb your mind in Krishna, and then all your material desires, which are inferior in quality, will naturally go away. You'll lose interest. From Natalia. I think she's from Estonia, if I'm correct. Is it appropriate to pray to Krishna for peace in a devotee's family where they have fights and their life is like hell? Pray that they can become Krishna conscious. That will automatically bring peace. You say, let them be peaceful but not be Krishna conscious. You can't really be peaceful until you become Krishna conscious. You may appear to be peaceful, but there's no genuine peace until Krishna's in the center. So you can pray that may they become Krishna conscious. That's very nice. That's the meaning of Bahir Nisingho. May Nisinga consciousness or Krishna consciousness be manifested everywhere, in every home, in every village, in every town. Okay. Harikata Das from South India. Can we consider previous acharyas as our siksha gurus? Certainly. If we read books like the Nectar of Devotion and Nectar of Instruction, even though those instructions they have are not given to us, even though we have not instructed us personally. Yes, they are all siksha gurus for us, these previous acharyas. Now, their instructions are all... we read about so many instructions are there in Prabhupada's books. From the previous acharyas, they are all our siksha gurus, certainly. Yes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur's initiating guru became a little bit off deviated. And he took more inspiration from Yeah. 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 There may be others. There may be other examples too. Our pundits may have done some research. There may be other examples. The only ones I know are those. But there may be other examples of siksha. There was no diksha. It's possible. Huh? Who? See, that doesn't diminish the importance of diksha. Absolutely not. Yes. Yes. Diksha, you have to take diksha from a spiritual master who is physically present. You can't take it from a departed Vaishnava. You can take it, you cannot get diksha from Prabhupada. Prabhupada actually directly stated on October 18, 1977, that he would not give any more initiations. That was just before he was leaving his body. He was on his deathbed. It completely defeats this Ritvik philosophy. The Ritviks say, no, Prabhupada's still initiating. That's it's a bogus philosophy. They say Prabhupada's still initiating. But Prabhupada, it's right there. You can look in the Veda base. You can hear the empathy recording with your own ears. He's saying, in this condition, I'm not going to initiate anymore. If I recover, maybe I will. But he directly states, I will no longer initiate. And then one man, a Bengali gentleman, came forward to get initiated by Prabhupada. And said, Prabhupada had one of his disciples initiate him. He's his own disciple. This was when Prabhupada was, I don't think he did it, but Prabhupada said that he should be a disciple of one of the Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada clearly established the principle that his disciples would be initiating gurus in his absence from this world. He told us that in May in great detail. He reconfirmed it on October 18th, just within like 2 weeks from his disappearance from the world. So the whole Ritvik philosophy is just, it's a complete concoction of envious people that don't want to, it's like the old story of the fox and the grapes. The fox was reaching for the grapes and he never reached and said, oh, they're sour. They wanted to be guru, but they weren't qualified. So nobody can be a guru. If I can't be a guru, nobody can be a guru, you see. Because they weren't qualified, therefore nobody's qualified. Simply sour grapes philosophy. I couldn't reach the grapes, so they're sour. You see. But no, the grapes are wonderful. You just weren't able to reach them, rascal. The grapes are wonderful. So we're over time, so we'll stop here. And we thank you all so much for coming to Bhagavatam class today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.